Oops, there. Get all situated here. Thank you, thank you. And thank you for the opportunity to return here. In this time of the pandemic, it seems we are all deluged with dozens of unanswerable questions, each one competing for our all too limited attention and capacity to focus. How long is this going to last? How are we going to make it financially? How are we going to keep ourselves safe? How do we live with this kind of uncertainty? As we vacillate between one question or another, whichever happens to be working us over at any particular moment, there might in fact be one question that lies beneath all the others. What matters? As you know, I serve as an oncology chaplain at UCLA, and last year, a year ago, as a part of the UCLA Centennial, I was invited on behalf of the UCLA Department of Arts and Architecture to be a presenter at their special 10 Questions event, the Centennial Edition. A series of 10 evenings, each one devoted to one particular question for our life and times, each one explored by a multidisciplinary panel of three. When I told my husband, Scott, about this honor of having been invited, he, of course, asked me, "What's your question?" "What matters?" I said. "Oh, everything and nothing," he said, and then he left the room. Pithy, yes, but also kind of true in a way. Everything matters and nothing matters. Our own individual lives, such as they are in this moment, are in fact a culmination of countless decisions we have made, choices we have made, both large and small, over the course of our lives, each one informed and shaped by our idea at the time of what mattered. Do I marry this person or not? Do I live in this city or not? Do I pursue this career or not? Or on a whole other scale, do I buy this new pair of shoes or save my money? Do I eat that last piece of chocolate cake or let it pass me by? Each decision is shaped by our idea at the time of what matters. On a national scale, we only have to look as recently as a year ago at our Democratic national primary debates to get a cross-section of what matters. Day one of my presidency, we're going to be addressing climate change. No, day one for me, it's healthcare reform. Day one for me, it's cleaning up the corruption in Washington or the catastrophe that's happened at our southern border. And it all matters. But look at what happened in the span of very few months. All of that had been trumped, you should pardon the expression, by the COVID-19 pandemic. Does it mean that all that stuff doesn't matter anymore? Of course not. It just means that this matters more right now. On a whole other scale, do you know what else matters? That you get home safely from the service this morning or from the next trip to the supermarket, or that we have enough cat food that Rupert's been fed, or that I have milk for my oatmeal tomorrow morning. Ultimately, I think what matters is this very moment, the thing that's right in front of us. I remember in the early 80s reading a magazine interview with Rosalind Carter. This would have been not long before she and Jimmy had moved back to their home in Plains, Georgia, leaving the White House. At the time of the interview, she was busily engaged in laying a new brick pathway up to the front stoop of their house. She commented to the interviewer with some astonishment to reflect that just a few months earlier, she and Jimmy had been living in the White House, hosting state dinners, Camp David Peace Accord, all of that, and now the most important thing in the world is that this brick is straight. And it matters, she said. Though I was such a young man, I was so struck by the profundity of that, so much so that it still sticks with me 40 years later. It's kind of Zen-like, isn't it? Around the same time, I remember taking some kind of self-development seminar or another, after all it was the 80s, in which we were given the task of writing our own epitaph. Now, if you've never tried it, it can be a daunting exercise, but also illuminating. It becomes even more daunting when we have to do it for real. My mom died a year ago, April, and there's only so much room on those little bronze plaques. Which few words are you going to choose to summarize, to encapsulate an entire human life? What I chose for myself in my 20s was he was moved by life. I think what matters is really quite fluid and changeable over the course of a lifetime, maybe even over the course of an afternoon. What mattered to me at 25 is not what mattered to me at 45, which bears little resemblance to what mattered to me at 65. I think in the first half of life, we're so consumed with pursuing our goals, accomplishing something, achieving success, as if we have the vaguest idea what that really means. Second half of life, I find, is a different story, but one inescapable truth for all but precious few of us is that a couple of generations from now, no one will know or remember or care that you even walked the earth. So given that reality, what matters? I have to come back to Rosalind Carter, that the bricks are straight. And yes, while I'm focusing on this brick in front of me, I have to be mindful and attuned to all these overwhelming problems that plague our planet. But when it comes time for me to take my last breath, what will I say matters then? In my role as an oncology chaplain, I would say I'm sort of in the coming out business. I'm creating a safe space for people to come out to me, to tell me their truth. Often their deepest truth, and often at the most critical time of their lives, at the end of it. But the way I see it, it's not only a coming out business, it's also a meaning-making business, because once that truth is out there on the table, how do we contain it? How do we hold it? How do we make sense of it? That's part of the gift and exhilaration of being able to do this work. Every day I get that constant reminder, Michael, pay attention, particularly as I move well into the third act of my life. When I reflect back on Acts 1 and 2, I realize how seldom it was that I was ever focused on the brick in front of me. I always had my eye around the corner to the next brick, the next decision. How does this one affect that one? What school do I go to? What class do I take? What do I major in? Which career do I pursue? Which relationships do I nurture to get me closer to wherever it is I think I want to go, the thing that I think is going to make me happy? And of course, that's still kind of true in a way, but maybe with less urgency. But maybe with even more urgency, because at this stage of my life, the big what's next is the final reckoning, the home stretch. So when it comes time for me to take my last breath, what will I say matters then? There are, of course, as many answers to that question as there are individuals on the planet, and yet I do hear common themes from folks who wrestle with that very question before deciding whether or not to sign up for guaranteed more suffering with the next chemo, the next drug trial, the next surgery. What is it that makes life worth fighting for? Well, I'd like to live long enough to see my son graduate high school or college. I'd like to live to see my daughter get married. I'd like to see my grandchildren be born. Still, I find those to be deceptively simple and tidy answers, seldom revealing the whole picture. Many years ago, I worked on the inpatient bone marrow transplant unit at UCLA. Lymphoma and leukemia patients mostly, who often spend many weeks, if not months, in the hospital. And there I met Leon, who was a difficult, prickly guy, not at all likable. In all of his weeks in the hospital, I never saw that he had a single visitor. And he was sort of proud of that. I don't need anybody, he would say. He had his own business, and he had a dog who scared the neighbors. Leon identified as an atheist, a secular Jew, and he presumed I was religious and a Christian, neither of which are true. But he used to enjoy duking it out with me, philosophically speaking. So that was the nature of our spiritual conversations. My kind of spiritual care was engaging in these theological discussions. Once he got his transplant, things went south very quickly. And the doctors came in with that awful assessment, nothing more we can do. Well, then the heart began to soften and the tears came. Of course, but the very next day, the docs came in and said, wait, Leon, we think you might qualify for this new drug trial. Oh, his spirits went through the roof, mine too. This is great news, Leon. Tell me, what are you going to do with more time if you get it? I really wanted to know. I'd like to finish my invoicing, he said. my heart just sank in total judgment, I admit. I was not a good chaplain in that moment. I did not ask the next obvious question. Oh, that's interesting. Tell me, why is it that your invoices mean so much to you? No, I just sat there in stunned silence. I guess I was hoping he'd say, I'd like to walk my dog on the beach one more time. I'd like to see one more beautiful sunset. I'd like to hear Rhapsody in Blue one more time. No, he said, I'd like to finish my invoicing. That's where he found his meaning. That's what mattered. Mary Ann, in her 40s, had lived the previous several years with pancreatic cancer, and I walked the last few months of her journey by her side. Not long before she died, I went to see her in the hospital, and she was hooked up to every kind of tube and pump and hose imaginable, absolutely fried, just cooked. Michael, I'm done. No more. But it wasn't an option. Because you see, her family, her husband, her kids wanted her to keep fighting. You gotta try the next surgery, the next drug trial. Let's get a second opinion, a third opinion, a fifth opinion. I can't die, she said, having them think for the rest of their lives I didn't love them enough to keep fighting. Do you think that's what they're gonna think of me, Michael? What do you want, Marianne? If you could call the shots right now. Oh, that's easy. I would disconnect all of this. I'd ask my husband to get in bed with me and look and hold me and look out that window across the room at that tree across the street. Say, look at that tree. Look at how those leaves catch the sunlight. Look at how that one flutters in the breeze. Isn't it beautiful? A God moment, she would call it. Over our months of conversation, she had told me about other God moments. For her, moments that anchored her into life. Moments in which not much really happened, in which the stuff and business of life just fell away, just leaving space and room for awareness of this moment being enough and being beautiful. I'd like one more God moment, she said. I met Evelyn on her first day of chemotherapy, after having been newly diagnosed with ovarian cancer. She came to see me every 2 weeks over the next 6 years, though she never wanted to talk about anything of any greater consequence than what she and her husband Gene had done the previous weekend. Despite all my invitation, holding the door open to talk about all the other deeper themes and questions coming down the pike, she never took the bait. I didn't feel like I was doing much of anything, but she concluded each visit by thanking me. Michael, I so appreciate our times to talk. I always feel so much better afterward. I went to see her in the hospital the day before she died. Her husband, Gene, was there, of course. They'd been married just forever. No kids, though. The Buddhists believe it's a good idea to be reflecting on the sweet memories of life before one makes their transition, that maybe it greases the wheels for the next incarnation. No matter what our beliefs are about such things, it's not a bad idea. So I asked Gene, tell me that story again about how you guys met. I love that story. He launched into the story, and Evelyn was getting a little irritated. She didn't remember. Undaunted, Gene pressed on. Sure you do, honey. Remember, we went to that football game, and we were in the back seat of that car, and no, the memory was gone forever. So Gene changed course. That's okay, honey. Maybe you're just tired. Tell you what, Michael and I will go out in the hall and we'll chat a little bit, give you a chance to rest. How about that? No, she said, I'm not tired. I want you both here. I just don't want anybody to talk. So I sat on one edge of the bed, and Gene sat on the other edge of the bed, and we each held a hand, and we just looked at each other in silence. Absolutely nothing to do. Absolutely nothing to say. Just this awareness of love in this moment being everything. For the rest of my life, that scene has imprinted my heart with an image of what truly sacred space looks like. And just maybe, what matters most is what's left, when everything that we thought had mattered so much has burnt away. So what matters to me now, today, in this moment? This conversation matters. Kindness really matters. Friendship matters. Love, of course. Humor, God knows. Kinship, witnessing one another in our lives as they are. Communion matters. An old-fashioned religious word, but I love the imagery of it. Taking in and digesting our common humanity, that thing that connects us to each other and to nature and to the source of life itself, that matters. Sure, I'd like to think when I'm taking my last breath that I'll think I made a difference here and there. I relieved a little bit of suffering. Maybe I provided some encouragement. That I made a difference. That I had a blast. That I saw the world that I loved hard. But I'm not so delusional, grandiose, to think it was ever anything more than one conversation at a time, one brick at a time. We go through our lives having countless interactions, conversations with others, little teeny conversations, the checker at the supermarket, a little encouragement here, a little smile or a joke there. Those interactions might have greater impact than anything we ever do. They might be our greatest legacy. Joseph Campbell says he believes it's important to realize the eternal within, to participate with joy in the sorrows of the world. I love that. I come back to it again and again as a kind of mantra, to participate with joy in the sorrows of the world. I don't know. Maybe it just comes down to being moved by life. So be it. Thank you.